Speaker for the evening, Steve from San Diego.
My name's Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
Sobriety date's August 31st, 2000. And first I want to thank God for God's grace and being able to be here. And thank Larry for asking me to come down here and welcome the newcomers. And alcohol, man, you know, what it was like was I love alcohol, man, for years, man. It started real young, and I was probably born alcoholic. I know some people, they become alcoholic, but in my case, I was born that way probably for sure, man. And there never was enough, man. For me, I, you know, when we read about more about alcoholism, for me, I love drinking alone. I love having it at home. I like, you know, drinking on the job. I like, you know, drinking and driving. I used to, you know how you look in the Thomas Guide where you're going to go look for a job. I used to say, man, I should make a Thomas Guide where it shows where all the liquor stores are, man. Because I know where all of them are, man, you know, because stopping by them, you know, in between jobs and then working for other people, man, you know, and breaking all the rules, you know. And I loved the effect of it, too, that alcohol made it so that I could tolerate everyone else in life. And then I used to think, man, well, I'm a good alcoholic because I can drink more than everyone else and I still know what I'm doing, man. I don't black out and stuff like that, but then I started doing stuff that I thought that since I'm already breaking the law, drinking and driving, you know, it made it easier to break the law in other things, man, doing other stuff too, man. So I'd like, oh well. And then I thought I was justified to do it, man, because it was opportunity or whatever, you know. And so I ran with that for years. And I drank alcoholically for like over 30 years. And I was 40 years old and almost 41. And some events had to happen for me to surrender. I guess they say surrender to win. I really didn't plan on coming here. It wasn't like I'm going to go to AA or whatever, but my first prayer was, God help me. When I wanted to really do something that I thought I might need some help, was, God help me, I don't know what to do. And God knew what to do. I think that's when I surrendered and quit fighting it, man. Because as long as I fight it or I force it, I get to keep it, man. And that's my alcoholism, you know. I'm going to die an alcoholic, and I'll be an alcoholic for the rest of my life, but I don't have to die from drinking alcohol. And that would have been the case if I didn't get here, man. What happened was I wanted some help, man, and I did the famous old help. I called my mom up and said, Mom, I think I need some help, man. I'm in trouble, man. My mom was up in she's living up there in Stanton, which is by Anaheim, and she came down and she goes, she was going to get me a hotel room or whatever. She's like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I go, no, I think I really need some help. So I wanted to get into a recovery program because I figured, you know, I didn't have a clue about, you know, the disease, how it worked. But I knew that I had to drink all the time, man. And I couldn't stop, man. So they wouldn't let me into detox. I mean, because I look normal, because I've been drinking for so many years, man, you know, as long, and I didn't get hangovers because I had high alcohol contents in my bloodstream the next day. Or, you know, sometimes, you know, and it was progressive because 10 years prior to me getting sober, I'd have like a half gallon of whiskey a week. And then it got to where I'd had 2 half gallons of whiskey a week. You know, that's the home supply, not counting the other stuff, drinking at the bars and all that stuff. And then in the end, it was 1 every 2 days, half gallon. And I remember one time, man, I'd run out of the whiskey, and I had to go to work, man. And the first thing I could think of is I need to go to a gas station where they sell hard alcohol so I can get some whiskey to make it to work, you know. And I never would fill my vehicle up, put $20 in there or whatever, you know. So anyway, what happened was is I wanted to get in this recovery home because I'm like, well, you know, and they had a 2.5 month waiting list. And I'm like, man, I could be dead in 2.5 months because the disease is accelerating. It's a progressive illness, fatal, man, and if I don't take care of it, but I didn't have a clue about that, but I knew it was getting bad real fast, man. The last month of my drinking career, I ran into the cops more times than in my whole life put together in the last month. And I had broke out in handcuffs, but I didn't get arrested. They didn't take me down. And I was a fourth waiver, and I go, I don't got no guns or drugs on me, but I got chainsaws and knives. And they go, okay, well, we're more scared about knives than guns because they go through our vest. You know, whatever, but... And sometimes they wouldn't even search me. They would go like, well, okay, you won't be a fourth waiver forever, you know. And so I'm like, well, I need to do something about this. So I wanted to get that home, and they go, well, if you go to 10-Day Volunteers of America, you might not have to wait 2.5 months to get into this home. And it was a 12-step role model program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So I wanted to get into 10-Day, and they're like, well, you need to go down and stay at St. Vincent's for 5 days and call us every day and go to a meeting every day and don't drink or pick up using any stuff, you know. So I'm like, okay. So I got into St. Vincent's, and St. Vincent's is almost like being in jail, man. It's trip down there, man. They got cameras everywhere, you can leave there, but you got to be back up there at a certain time. The guy that was in the bunk next to me, he's all like, he had 2 cell phones, and he had a pocket full of money. He's all like, pulls his cell phones out. He's all the dope man, and he's all like, so this guy was like dealing while he was staying at St. Vincent's. And he's all like, me and my wife, we come here every year for 4 months, and she stays up there at the women's place, and I stay over here so he can come up again, you know what I mean? So he's hiding out at St. Vincent's, sneaking out of there and doing his thing or whatever. And I'm like, man, this is kind of freaky, man. So I end up going to a meeting every day and then calling up down at Volunteers of America, because I was trying to get in there, because I had to check in every day. On the 5th day, I called down there, and I talked to the director. He's like, you missed 1 day. And I go, no, I didn't. I called every day. And he's like, okay, well, come down here. So I got into 10 days, and 10 days is much better than St. Vincent's, man. I was like, oh, man, this place is nicer, but you can't talk to anybody outside because, you know, and then they're giving us all this education, man. I learned about the disease that for me, man, I don't digest alcohol like a normal person. First of all, once I take that first drink, the phenomenal craving kicks in, and then the obsession of the mind really works, man. Good, you know, you have to drink because allergy starts up, man, and that's why they say the first drink gets you drunk for an alcoholic. And I'm like, what the heck? takes me more than one drink, But once I take the first one, I can't stop, So I didn't really, So the teacher we had down there, he's giving us you're getting like 30 days of education in 10 days, man. And I'm like, man, why do you guys teach us so much stuff, man? And the teacher goes like, well, if you throw enough shit at the wall, something's going to stick. And I'm like, oh, okay, So I was down at at 10 day, and some of those guys would leave 10 day. They'd be in there like 1 or 2 days, and they started getting the detoxes, man, real bad, and like, out the door, they're gone, But I stayed there 10 days, and then I called up the place I wanted to get into, man, that saved my life. I called them up, and they're like, well, come right down here as soon as you get out of there. But we're not saying whether we're going to let you in or not, because we want to interview you, and all this stuff, And I'd already been down there and checked it out. I went to, like, a meeting there before I went into 10-day, and I'm like, okay, I can check. I'll try to get into this place. And then so I went down there and had my interview, and the guys are like, well, because I had a dog, man, and my dog was in a pet motel, and then I was married to and had a wife. And the guy at the intake goes like, well, you got a lot of problems, man. We don't know if we want to have you come in here because if we do decide to let you come in here, we don't want your wife to know where you're at, because we don't want her coming around here. We don't want no drama or all this stuff. So I'm like, anyway. So what happened was the guy that let me in there, intake guy, bless his heart, man. He let me in there. He went and talked to the director. The director goes, let him in, man. We want sick ones like that to come in here, man. Because at first he didn't want to let me in there because he thought it would be wasting a bed because they didn't think I was going to make it. So there's a lot to be said how hopeless you are. The more hopeless, the better, man. If you're real hopeless, man, because you're not going to surrender if you got some hope left, It's like dope, You're like, oh, I got something left, man. Why should I give up the fight and surrender, the guy goes, we're going to let you in, man. And they're showing me around the house, and I was crying like a little baby, man. They're like, welcome home, man. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, man? Why are you crying? Because by the time when they let me in there, I had 15 days, man. Because I was at St. Vincent's for 5 days, and then 10 days for 10 days. And I was crying, and I was crying because I was happy that they welcomed me home, man. Nobody welcomed me home, man. So they showed me around the house there, I stayed there for exactly 9 months, but before I had this hernia, man. I was in the house, and I had this hernia. I'd had it for like 12 years. But it didn't really hurt, but it looked like it was going to pop out of my stomach, But it didn't hurt. And there's another guy in the place that had a hernia operation taken care of, and he lived. So I'm like, well, maybe I can do this, man. Because I had the county medical services because I was like homeless in a recovery home. So I'm like, well, I think I'll get this hernia taken care of, man. Because this is a good time. And I wanted to go back to work full time. I had like 60 days. I went and asked the director, oh, when can I go back to work full time? And he's like, look at me. Like, look at me right in your eye. What did you come here for? Did you come here to get a job or did you come here for recovery? I came here for recovery. He goes, good. Don't worry about getting a job. That was the best thing that ever happened to me, man. Him telling me that, so I wasn't just thinking about getting a job. I was thinking about my recovery first, man. Recovery first, number one, man. So they didn't let me go back to work full time till I was there 8.5 months. I was supposed to be leaving in 2 weeks, but that gave me a foundation, man. So anyway, I didn't have a problem doing the first, second, and third step, man. God can't. I think I'm going to let him. I know I'm powerless. My life's unmanageable, man, over alcohol. And, um, and there's a power greater than myself. But then turning my will and my life over to the care of God, I can do that, man. I know there's a God, because God has always gotten me out of stuff before, only when I was in trouble. But I would, like, be an Indian giver, man. I would tell God, get me out of this, and I won't do it again. And I go right back to doing what I was doing. So for the first time in my life, I didn't take my will back to do the bad stuff. But I'll still take my will back. Today, even, man, sometimes. Sometimes pain's a good motivator. When you're in pain, you know there's something that needs to be done, man. So sometimes that's like the touchstone of all spiritual growth, is when I'm in enough pain, I'm going to let go and I'm going to turn it over. Or I'm going to do something that I'm going to regret and it's going to get me in trouble, man. I'm going to do something that ain't loving, kind, and tolerant to somebody else, man. Or myself, even, you know. So to catch myself, you know, that's another thing, you know, is I've learned stuff like catch it, check it, change it. When I catch myself when I'm not acting right, and then I check, why am I acting that way? And then I change it. So I don't, you know what I mean? Before I came here, if somebody would have told me that stuff, man, I would have said, no way, man. I'm going to react without thinking before I think what I'm going to do. And I'll tell you why. It's because if I think what I'm going to do before I react, that'll give somebody some time to come up on me. That's crazy thinking, you know? And I thought like that for years, man. And then I thought that when I drank whiskey, it made it so I could do a better job because it gave me the courage, you know? Like the fire water or, you know, liquid courage, man. So I wouldn't be as scared to do what I had to do, man. So anyway, I still do the same kind of work, but a lot of people thought I was going to have to change my career, man. They're like, man, you don't know, man. You're climbing trees loaded like that for years with a chainsaw, and now you think you're going to get sober. You're going to get sober, man, and you're going to still be able to do it. But I was able to do that, but it was the most painful thing I ever did in my life. You really want to feel pain when you get sober, you know. And then on top of it is that I didn't realize that alcohol was a depressant, man. So I was super depressed when I first stopped drinking, because it's like I lost my best friend, man. I'm like, I love liquor so much, and now I lost my best friend. But my best friend had turned on me way before I'd gotten sober. It was my enemy, man, and it wanted to trick me into doing stuff that wasn't nice, you know, and stuff like that, so I end up drinking again if I'm not careful. So anyway, I was in that house, man, and I had this operation, man. I went and got this operation taken care of, and man, they didn't keep me overnight when I went down there to get the surgery. And they cut me open and sewed it up, man. And you talk about pain. They cut through all your stomach muscles to fix this thing, man, or whatever. That was painful, man. Because I didn't want to do that, but I took care of it, and then I survived and all that stuff. And But what happened is they gave me some pain pills. And I came back to the house, and they were like, give us those pain pills. We're putting them in the safe, man. You're not holding that container, man. No way. We'll give them to you when you need them when you're in pain, but we don't want you having the whole bottle, you know. That was a good thing they did that. Because for me, man, no. If it says take one every 4 hours, 4 in 1 hour is going to work better, you know. For sure, man. So I gave them to them. Right about that time, man, my wife was in Rachel's, man. She was trying to get sober, and what happened is on the anniversary of her dad passing away, she went out and drank wine, man, or whatever, man. I thought I'd been like, I didn't want to do my fourth step of taking inventory. I didn't want to write that stuff down and share it with somebody else, because I'm like, you know what? Why do I need to do that, man? I could just do 1, 2, and 3, and then I don't want to write that stuff down because I think they can hold it against me, you know? It's like a confession, dude. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a confession. So I was like scared. I was more lazy than scared, because I really didn't want to share that stuff with somebody else either, you know. But I did. As soon as she went out and drank, man, I thought I'd drink it, man. And so I had it done. I had it done. So I tell people, oh, it took me 6 months and one day to do a fourth step, you know. But then I did the fifth with somebody else. So I wouldn't go out and drink a fifth, you know. For me, it's very important that as soon as you have a fourth step done, and when I'm taking somebody through the fourth step, man, and have them write down that stuff, I share some of my dirt with them and stuff like that. So they're like, oh, that's all you did? Because sometimes they're scared to let somebody know what they did or whatever, you know. There ain't nothing, nobody's done something more than somebody else. It's just sometimes the defects are stronger than others. But everybody's done the same stuff, man. I don't care, man. You might say, I never stole no freaking booze. But if you didn't come home with your family when you're supposed to be home, you were stealing from them. Emotional sobriety, you're stealing from them emotional stability and stuff like that. When you're not where you're supposed to be with the people you love, you're still stealing from them, man. So, and that's another thing about, like, when I don't, I'm like vigorously honest. Well, I might not want to tell them what's really going on, but am I lying? Yeah, I'm lying in a way. When I don't really tell somebody what's really going on, I'm not telling them the truth, you know. So stuff like that, man, will keep you messed up, man, if you don't get through that part of it. And, you know, today it's like people will go like, hi, nice to see you. If you would have said that before I came in here and got sober and clean, I would have said, what did you see? You didn't see me because I wasn't here. No, I'm serious, man. That's how it was, man. You're like, oh, yeah, you didn't see me. I wasn't here. So if you and if the boss says anything to you, you better not say nothing about anybody else unless it's about you. I used to tell people that, man. They didn't even. I would be like, there'd be a new guy at work, and I'd be driving a big truck, man. I have a joint rolled up, man, and I'm like, okay, man. I look at the Thomas guide. I know where I'm going to go to work. And now I can smoke this joint. And the new guy would be like, what are you doing, man? I'm like, you know what? Check this out, dude. I've been here for 4 years. You tell the boss anything about me smoking, I'm going to tell him you're lying, dude, and he ain't going to believe you. And the guy wouldn't the guy wouldn't show up to work the next day. He wouldn't, man. He's like, I ain't working with that crazy dude, man, or whatever. But I ended up getting fired from that job. I did, man. I'd been up for like 3 days. Because I did some other stuff too, but I'd been doing some crystal. And I called my buddy up and I go, dude, I need some more stuff, man. I got to have some of that stuff because I haven't slept in 3 days. And I'm like, and so he gave me the little bindle and I put it in my front pocket by my wallet. And my supervisor goes, call up Labor Ready. We need a couple extra workers. And so I go to pull out my wallet with a number in it, and I drop the bindle on the ground, man. And he's all like, what's that? And I'm like this, what's what? And I stuck it in my pocket, back in my pocket. And then he's all like, well, he goes to my boss, and my boss goes, I think Steve's doing some stuff, man, or something like that. My boss tells me, you're going down to Paradise to get drug tested. And I'm like, what? F you. I ain't going to no get drug tested. Okay, you're fired then. I had a job at another company in 2 days, man. But that's before I. But now, since I got sober, what it's like now. I stayed in Pathfinders for exactly 9 months. Gave my wife divorce papers when I got out of there, man. But I waited a year. She, you know, and then I had my girlfriend that's like my wife now. I've been with her longer than when I was married, and she told me I ain't getting out of here alive. So, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, you know. And but what's a trip is she knew me before when I was married, you know. So and she knew I had a problem. A lot of people knew I had a problem, but they weren't going to tell me what to do because I'd tell them, you know what? F you. You ain't telling me what to do, you know. And that's because the alcohol is so strong, man. It thinks you got some kind of authority when you're drinking it, and I used to think crazy stuff like the only people that got more authority than me is the cops. But they got a gun on them. You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, man. So anyway, what it's like now is, man, it's been tough, man. I'll tell you one thing that in sobriety, at least for me, now, some people might have it easy and stuff like that, but for me, the longer I'm sober and working a program, the harder my difficulties are, but I can get through them. Every year, like, just to give you an example, man, it's 6 years. I've been doing, working for myself, contracting out jobs, but I didn't have a contractor's license. It's 6 years of being sober. I got a contractor's license. Bought a house, man. Lost the house, but I still got my contractor's license. My contractor's license has my sobriety date on the license, man. But it's 6 years after I got sober. Now, to me, this is a God thing because that contractor's license says 83106 on it when I got it, you know. And that's like God saying, you know what? You got a sobriety date. That's why you got that contractor's license. You wouldn't have got that license if you weren't sober. No way, you know. And the thing is, I would have been too scared to work for myself. You know, I love working for myself. People go like, are you work? My old employer, because I had to make amends to some of my employers. One of my old employers, is the secretary goes like, oh, how are you working hard? I go, no, I hardly work. But I like that. You know what I work hard when I work. And right now, lately, I've been working for this other company, you know, and I don't like it, but it keeps me humble. I've been subcontracted out to another company, and they're paying me a day rate, which is what I like to make in like an hour or two, you know. And but it's made me humble. And then they've been having me razor knife palm trees. Now I can do it, but I hate razor knifing palm trees because it's tedious, man, and it takes a long time. And so the guys are like, well, I want you to come in there on Mondays and Fridays because I don't want to skin palm trees 2 days in a row. You can't pay me enough money to do it, man. It's treacherous, man. And I go, well, I'll come in on Mondays and Fridays and do it. And we're working out in Coronado, the case. And on Friday I went down there and I'm all ready to skin. And they only got one boom truck. They bought the boom truck and they're like, Steve, you want to use the boom truck to skin today? And I'm like, I was loving it, man. It made me really stoked because I'm like, I was already grateful that I was climbing the trees and skinning them. But then when they brought the boom truck in and let me skin from the boom truck, man, it's a lot easier. It was a lot easier, man. But sobriety, to me, my sobriety is priceless. There ain't nothing better than this. And I didn't get here like that, liking it. But I like every part about it. What I like the most is when I got a heart, when things aren't going my way and I'm having a bad day, that I know for sure that God isn't going to let me down, man. That as long as I turn it over to God, man, I'm going to get through it, man. Whatever it is, I don't care, man. And then helping somebody else out. When I'm helping somebody else out in the program, or even if they're not in the program, because I go and do stuff sometimes, man. Like on next week Friday, I'm going to be volunteering at the college. We're going to go do some free tree work for some trees that need some loving, you know. And but I volunteered to go do that to give back, you know. So to me, you know. You know who's walking the talk. If you think somebody's coming in here and saying all that stuff, follow them around, man. Watch where they go and what they do, man. Not everybody is, man. And I'll tell you another thing is that if somebody says, you'll hear people go like, oh, don't take other people's inventory. Well, that's only if you haven't taken your own inventory. Because you can take other people's inventory if you take your own inventory. And you know why? It's because how are you going to know who the winners are in the program? You're not going to, man. But you better take your own inventory first, you know. Because to me, I think if I take my own inventory, I can take your inventory. Sorry if you don't like it. And I'll tell you, you know, and I'll tell you another thing is, Another thing is that I love another man's pain more than my own. I do, man. I'll tell you straight up, man. I love it. You know why? Because it lets me know that whatever I'm going through, I'm going to be able to get through that, man, when it happens to me, man. But I love another man's pain way more than my own. And your pain's my gain if I'm looking out at it, you know. And I used to love my own pain. Before I got sober, I bet that's my pain. I remember chipping with my arms, bleed, blood all over the place. Guys backing off and handing me branches to throw through the chipper. The old chippers that used to whip you up, man. Not the ones that, like they got nowadays, man. The nowadays ones, they like self-feeding, you know. Yeah, they'll stop and slow down. The ones we used to use, be like throwing through it. Man, it would gnarl you out, man. Anyway, I'm real grateful to be here. And if you make your sobriety the most important thing to you in your life, you'll keep it, man. And stay grateful, especially when you're having a bad day, when things aren't going your way and you're having a bad day. Stay grateful, and because a grateful alcoholic in recovery will not relapse, man. It's impossible to relapse if you stay grateful, man. But when we get ungrateful, resentment comes in. That stuff will kill us, man. To me, when I got a resentment or fears or anger, if I'm angry and mad, I might as well put a danger sign on my forehead. Because I'm in danger of getting in trouble, man, or doing something stupid. You know, so that's why sobriety comes first, man. You know, it's a slip stance for your sobriety lost its priority. And then your ego is edging God out, man. Like, when my ego's big, my God's small, man. But when my ego... And you know what the thing is? I still don't want to smash my ego, and God smashes it for me. And He smashes it in ways I don't like it sometimes, man. Like, people doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing to me, you know, and when I'm expecting them to act right, when they don't... And my first idea ain't spiritual if somebody ain't acting right. It isn't, man. It isn't. I got something for you, you know, and it's probably not going to be good because I still want to go and choke them out, you know what I mean? If you ain't breathing, there's more air for me, and I don't have to listen to you, you know? But, you know, the reason I say that is because I don't want, you know, like we're not saints, but a lot of times people think, oh, we're going to be all good, good, good. That's... No, it ain't happening, you know, it ain't happening, you know. But one thing is when I'm kind and loving and tolerant to other people, especially when they're not, it's like taking out an insurance policy on God's grace. When I'm doing something, because you can be nice all you want when you're having a good day, man. You know when you talk about principle for personality stuff, man? Yeah, when everything's going your way... Why wouldn't you want to be nice, you know? But most of the time, things aren't going to go your way, man. How are you going to act then, man? And I'll close with this, is that to me, man, the winners in the program aren't somebody that's got all that stuff. Sure, that stuff's nice. I like stuff too, man. But what's inside their heart when things aren't going good and they're having a bad day and things aren't going their way. They know, intuitively know how to get through that, man. Difficulties, man. My grand sponsor, man, bless his heart, he's dead now. He said his teenage years were the roughest years in his sobriety, man. Between 12 and 17. And he died with almost 40 years, man. He had 40 years, you know. So, you know, but the thing is that I didn't like it when he said that. Because I'm like, man, that's what I got to look forward to. You know that, oh, man, but it's a good thing, because if you can't get through the hard times, man, you're not going to know what to do with the good times when they come. You know, so anyway, thank you for letting me share. It's been an honor and privilege.